Good morning, everyone, and welcome to I Eat Green with Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm Bhavani, and today I have a fellow PRN guest host with me as my guest, Karen Harklath from Responsible Eating and Living. And I am interviewing her this week, and earlier in the week she interviewed me, and we are using this opportunity to introduce each other to our listening audience, and I'm really excited to have her on my show, and we'll be talking with her in a little while. But first, I, of course, want to tell you some of the things going on this week in the New York area and surrounding areas. First off, this Monday, January 21st, Occupy Movement is having an Occupy Monsanto for a GMO-free inauguration. So if you are anywhere in the Washington area or feel like venturing from wherever you are to Washington, D.C., on January 21st, it's going to be a large protest to let President Obama know that we think it is time for a GMO labeling law and that we have a right to know, especially in the wake of the new GMOs that Monsanto is introducing. Starting this year, they will be making their GMOs even more dangerous. They have added the chemical that is associated with Agent Orange into their GMOs, so it will be causing even more devastation to the soil and pollutants into the water due to the strength of this GMO. So if you are around and can join in the movement, people are meeting at DuPont Circle at 9 a.m. and departing for the mall at 9:30. If you can make it, they're asking people to register, and you can register at organicconsumersassociation.org. So it would be wonderful if you could make it. Also coming up is the NOFA Winter Conference next weekend, January 25th to the 27th, and that's in Saratoga Springs, and that's a coming together of the whole New York area from upstate New York to Long Island and everything in between. And there's great workshops, and it's a wonderful time for farmers and people who care about the food system to meet and discuss where we're going. If you don't make it there and you live near the city and you have children, Sunday, January 27th, Super Sprouts Live is coming to Century 21 store downtown New York City. I had Rod on my show last year or 2 years ago for Super Sprouts, and they're really expanding, and they have a whole slew of wonderful children's books and puppets to encourage children to eat their vegetables. So, of course, there's Andy Broccoli and, you know, all the Erica eggplant and all these different superhero vegetables, and they'll all be there live at Century 21, and it's free, and it's from 11 to 1. So if you can make it, that would be fun to for your children, and it would be fun to support Super Sprouts. On February 27th, there is another protest for the Keystone Pipeline down in Washington. I will definitely be going to that. I was there not this past summer, but the summer before, for a large Keystone protest. And it is a very, very worthwhile movement to get behind. It's sponsored by 350.org and the Sierra Club. And the Keystone Pipeline is a horrible pipeline that is set to go from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. With it, it will be polluting the area all around it, from Canada all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. When they finally get that dirty oil down to the Gulf of Mexico, it's then supposed to be exported to China. So it's not even for our use. And we really have to put a stop to the drilling and the, you know, depleting of our natural resources and start using renewable energies and investing more money into that. So anytime you see a petition where you can sign a petition or send a letter to any of your congressmen or to the president encouraging the expansion of renewable resources, we need to do that. I know I saw this week Google had invested in a wind farm out in Texas that looks really promising. The more we can invest in wind farms and solar energy and divest all of our money and encourage, there's a big push for universities, for students and alumni to push universities to divest all their money in any investments they have in fossil fuel companies and corporations that promote GMOs. So we need to become political, and that's one of the things that I'll be talking about with Karen Harkless later on in this show, is how we really have to move from just making the right decisions with our fork to really becoming more politically active. And that's hard for me as someone who has been anti-politics so much of my life. I've really found that now as I've gotten older, I've really come to grips with the fact that in order to make change, we really have to start at the local level and expand beyond that and really try to get our congressmen, senators, and the president to think on a more global vision for the future of our planet, and we need to get involved in that. Another wonderful thing going on in the city, at the American Museum of Natural History, they are having a great exhibit called Our Global Kitchen, Food, Nature, and Culture. And that is, you know, opened on November 17th, and it's great. I'm actually not sure when it is closing, but it is really worth seeing. So go on to the American Museum of Natural History's website and find out about this Global Kitchen exhibit. Definitely worth seeing. It explores where our food has come from, where it is going, and everything in between. So that's really a great thing. Also coming up is the Just Food Conference from March 29th to March 30th. That was rescheduled from February, since the February vacation was taken away, and it's being housed at the Food and Finance High School. The building was no longer available, so they've moved it to the March vacation. So, unfortunately, I won't be around for that one, so I'm not going to be able to make it. But if you can make it, it's a wonderful, wonderful conference. So try to get there. And that is it for now as far as the things coming up. I want to share my recipe with you, of course, before I invite Karen on. This week, my recipe is stuffed peppers with millet. Actually, one other thing I wanted to mention. Last week, Thursday, for my show, I looked in the paper before I came on to be able to report back to you about the protest that took place in Albany last week. And on Wednesday, there was over 1,500 people that protested up in Albany, and it did not even make the papers. And it was really, really kind of sad that nowhere in the New York Times, I mean, 1,500 New Yorkers gathered in Albany, possibly even more, to let Governor Cuomo know that we don't want fracking in our state. And that's another really important issue that we all need to get behind. Fracking also pollutes the water. It will come down to the New York area, since so much of our water comes from upstate New York, and it devastates the communities where it's taking place, and it increases cancer in the communities. So we really need to put a stop to fracking and not allow it in New York State. So please get behind that. And that's what I'm saying. We need to all get behind these issues that are so important. There's so many, and it's really easy to want to just stick our head in the sand and not get involved because there's so much. And it is overwhelming, I agree. But we all need to do it. We need you out there who care about our environment and our food to get behind these issues, because the huge corporations like Monsanto and Nestle and Cargill and Kroger's and Kraft and, you know, Pepsi, Coke, all those companies have millions and billions of dollars to put behind this, and we don't. But we have the numbers of people. So we need to outdo their money with the numbers of people. So please find a issue that you can really wrap your hands around and get involved in with your heart, mind, and soul, and become active. Okay, So back to my recipe. Stuffed peppers with millet. These were great, and I don't know how many of you heard that my private clients now are requesting that I do one or two meals a week vegan, and I'm so excited because for years this is a family that was based in meat and potatoes. Their diet was mostly meat and potatoes. And since I have been working with them, they are eating so much healthier, less fat, more fish, less dairy, and more vegan. So anyway, I'm thrilled now that they are really into looking at their diet and reducing their dairy and meat intake. So here's the stuffed peppers with millet. It's really satisfying. Millet is another grain that is underutilized in our society, but it's very high in protein, super healthy, easy to make, quick. It's kind of like quinoa, but it hasn't really made it to the forefront yet. So this recipe hopefully will help that. You want to start with 8 large organic peppers, and I want to stress organic. Peppers are one of those vegetables that are in the do not use list, you know, the dirty dozen. That's put out by the Environmental Working Group. If you don't have that list, it's one worth getting. Environmental Working Group, EWG.org. And they have a list of the dirty dozen, the vegetables that are most important to buy organic. They also have a list called the Clean 15, which are the vegetables that are least sprayed and you don't have to worry about as much. So if you have to make choices between when you're going to invest in organic versus not organic, these are great resources. They also have lists of cleaning stuff. They also have lists for fish. So it's a really great website, environmentalworkinggroup.org. Back to the recipe. So you want 8 large organic peppers. You choose the color, red, orange, yellow. I don't love green, but if green's your thing, go ahead, have green. But the red, orange, and yellow are usually sweeter. 1 large onion, you're going to chop that. 2 leeks chopped fine. And the tops of the leeks you discard, the thick green part. And you use the part that's mildly green down to the root. And you cut the ends of the roots off. To clean the leeks really need to be cleaned well because the dirt hides in the different layers of the leeks. So you cut the leeks down the center lengthwise. So you're cutting it the long way and then separate the different layers and really wash it well before you chop it. 2 carrots chopped fine. 1 broccoli cut into small flowerets. 10 shiitake mushrooms, stems removed and chopped. 1 package dried organic mushroom medley. And if you want to use fresh mushrooms instead, you can. But one thing that was interesting is I had a guest on who specialized in mushrooms, and I had another guest on once who was macrobiotic, and they actually said the dried mushrooms have more nutritional value, believe it or not, than sometimes the fresh mushrooms. So anyway, it's nice to combine them both. 2 cups of millet. And you can pre-cook the millet according to the directions, but millet takes like 1.5 cups of water to the 2 cups of, I'm sorry, to 1 cup of grain, as opposed to 1 to 2. It's 1 to 1.5. 1 cup of cooked forbidden rice, and I use that actually because I had it left over from another recipe, so it could be 1 cooked of brown rice would be fine too, but the forbidden rice is nice because it's black, and so it added a nice color to the stuffed peppers, 1 can fire roasted tomatoes, and Muir Glen, which had been my my fire roasted tomato of choice, is one of the companies that I am protesting because they donated so much money into the GMO labeling laws to defeat Proposition 37 because they are owned by General Foods. So I'm boycotting Muir Glen, so try to find another company that has the fire-roasted tomatoes. I know Whole Foods has their own brand. They came out just in time, so I've been buying the Whole Foods brand of fire-roasted tomatoes. 1 can of cannellini beans. When I buy canned beans, the company of choice is Eden, because they are the only canned beans out there that I have seen that actually uses kombu when cooking the beans. And when you use kombu in cooking beans, if you want to cook your own beans, that's great, starting with dry beans. But you also want to use kombu because it reduces the gas gas in your body, helps that with digestion for the beans, and so it's much better. A quarter cup of chopped dill, a quarter cup plus 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, 2 tablespoons plus 1/2 teaspoon maple syrup, 1 teaspoon garlic, 2 cups tomato sauce, 1 1/2 cups of water, 1 1/2 cups organic parsley, 1 cup chopped walnuts, olive oil, and salt and pepper to taste. Also, the reason I separate 1 quarter cup plus 1 teaspoon apple cider vinegar is because I'm doing 2 different processes. So you'll see in the directions as we go through it. Also, just to know that this recipe will be posted on the PRN website by tomorrow, so you can always download the recipes from there, and you also can find them on my website at www.iegreen.com. First, in a large pan, sauté the onions, carrots, and leeks in olive oil until soft and caramelized. Add the broccoli and continue cooking until soft. Season with salt and pepper. Meanwhile, cover the dried mushrooms with boiling water and set aside to soak for 20 minutes until soft. Add the fire-roasted tomatoes, beans, dill, vinegar, and the 2 tablespoons of maple syrup to the sauté pan and continue cooking for 5 more minutes. Remove the pan from the heat and transfer to a large bowl. Add the cooked millet, the cooked rice, the walnuts, and parsley and mix together. Drain the dried mushrooms, reserving the soaking water for later. Chop the mushrooms and sauté them with the shiitake mushrooms in olive oil using the same sauté pan that you use for the other vegetables. One of my goals always when I'm making recipes is to try to use as few pots and pans as possible. Since I don't have a dishwasher, I am the dishwasher, so I try to minimize as many dishes as possible. Add the garlic to the sautéed mushrooms, the extra 1/2 teaspoon of maple syrup, and the 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, and continue cooking for 5 more minutes until soft. And then add that to the filling. And then you're going to stuff the peppers with the filling. You want to first find a casserole pan or a Pyrex dish or whatever you want to bake the peppers in. Try to find something that is the right size so that you can stand the peppers up so that the filling won't fall, so that the peppers won't fall over and the filling fall out. So you're going to stuff the peppers with the filling and stand them up side by side in whatever casserole pan you find. And really try to secure them in there so they won't fall over. Then you're going to mix the tomato sauce with the water, and I use the water from the mushrooms that the mushrooms are soaking in. You know, really nutritious, delicious, flavorful water, and so you don't want to just waste that. And then you're going to pour that all around the peppers, and I poured a little bit on top as well, and I covered it with aluminum foil. You're going to bake it for 1.5 hours. So the preparation time is not long, but then you have to allow for baking it for 1.5 hours. And you want to baste it a couple times during the cooking process, so like every 30 minutes, set your timer and just baste it with the juices. And it is just really delicious. It's so satisfying. It's a really hearty meal, especially this time of year. It's one of those comfort foods. So enjoy, and let me know. You can always leave comments on my website about the recipes and let me know how you like them. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to invite Karen Harkless on. She is the owner and founder of Responsible Eating and Living, known as REAL, R-E-A-L. She was born and raised in New York and received her bachelor's and master's of science degrees in chemical engineering from Bucknell University. She has a passion for helping people and understands the effects of food choices on health and environment. And she ran the nonprofit Earth Save International as the executive director for over 8 years. She's an ovarian cancer survivor, and Karen combines science with practical knowledge from real-life experiences, lecturing around the world about the powerful healing benefits of plant-based diet. And that's a hard one to heal, so that's really amazing that Karen was able to heal herself with this. And she's going to tell us more about responsible eating and living, and she has her weekly show on the Progressive Radio Network. It's called It's All About Food, and she also has another internet radio show called Ask a Vegan. Karen, are you with us?
I am. Good
Welcome.
Morning.
This is really fun. I was with you on Tuesday, and now you get to be with me.
And it is really fun. I love, all week I've been talking on the Progressive Radio Network about my favorite subject, food.
Food, I know. I can talk all day about food.
I can.
It's really wonderful. So why don't you tell us about Responsible Eating and Living, what you do there. I know it's a nonprofit organization. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Okay. Well, I founded Responsible Eating and Living not too long ago. It was in the middle of 2011. And I was motivated to do this after I went through my romp with advanced ovarian cancer, which you mentioned in my bio. And I had learned so much during this time because I had worked with EarthSave International for about 8 or 9 years, and I was on the board for a long time, and I connected with so many different people in the alternative food movement, the alternative health movement, and I learned a lot. And then when I was in my own crisis, I thought, okay, now it's time to take all that stuff that I've learned and read and use it. I did. And when I founded Responsible Eating and Living, I wanted to focus on all of that really valuable information and put it in a package form, put it in a form that's digestible. I love using food terms when I talk about things. And for people that are in a health crisis, I have information that I believe can help them. For people that just want to be well, I have information. And my thing is all about joy. We talked about this the other day, but I love making food that's delicious and healthy. This is not a deprivation diet. This is like finally I'm at peace with my food.
Right, right. One of the things that we talked about on Tuesday as well was how much of the food out there that is vegan, at least from my perspective, doesn't taste very good. And, you know, taste like you're depriving yourself of something. And that's one of the things that I, as you just mentioned, am all about. I don't want to feel deprived, ever. Yeah. I want to make choices that are healthier and better for myself and for the environment. But I want to make those choices conscious, but I want to find substitutions that are satisfying so that I'm not feeling like I'm depriving myself.
Taste is very relative. I'm sure you know this, but it's relative. It's based on so many different things. What we were brought up eating, what our culture is, what we're familiar with, and what the media has manipulated us to think is good to eat. There's so many different factors involved. And if we want to move to a healthier diet and be satisfied with what we're eating, there's some thought work that has to go on as well. If you're looking at different foods and think, I love this cookie, but I know it's not good for me, a change has to go on, not only a physical change, because as you reduce oil, salt, and sugar in your diet, your taste buds become far more sophisticated, but also just when you associate with a food that isn't good for you, if you can associate what's not good for you in the food, it won't be as appealing over time.
Right.
That's a mouthful.
Right. So what transitioned you into being a vegan? I know you did all this research to find a diet that would help heal yourself of your struggle. What did you find that convinced you that a vegan diet was the way to go?
Well, first I have to say I was vegan when I was diagnosed with cancer, and that was shocking because I thought I was on a diet that was going to make me live forever.
Wow, that is surprising.
And I had been on a long-term path for health and wellness. But what got me on this path was when I was a teenager, I realized that animals were killed for food, and I didn't want to participate in pain and suffering, and I didn't want to kill animals. And then over the next like 15 years, I learned more about it, and I was still eating eggs and dairy. And then as I learned about the cruelty involved in raising cows and chickens for eggs and dairy, or for dairy and eggs, I decided I couldn't participate in that. And I also started learning about how terrible dairy foods are for health. And I loved butter. I love cheese. So many people do. We've discovered there are things in cheese that are addictive. So it's not surprising that we all crave it.
Uh-huh.
I started, like I talked a moment ago, about changing my association with these foods. And when I started seeing the cheese, the butter, the ice cream, I saw the distressed cow. I saw the cruelty involved. I connected it with the health problems, and that helped me wean myself from those foods.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, I did get cancer, but I believe that I was living with a problem for a very long time, and my diet helped me live with it. And then, thanks to conventional medical treatment, I had surgery and I had chemotherapy, removed the problem. And my diet, plus what I had learned to add to my diet to increase the dark leafy green vegetables, increase the foods that boost my immune system, I cured it.
Uh-huh. Amazing. You know, and that's one of the things that I say to people also is you don't know what you're going to actually do until you are there facing that crossroad yourself. You know, it's very easy to say, I won't go Western medicine. I'm only going to do it through diet, or to say I'm only going to do Western medicine. I'm not going to do diet. And it's really a marriage. You have to find what's right for you.
Yeah, I don't say in chemotherapy, I don't promote it. I know for many, many kinds of breast cancer, for example, chemotherapy is unnecessary. There are different kinds of cancers, slow ones and fast ones, but I worked with some doctors that I really had a lot of faith with, and we talked about it, and basically I just had to go with it. I don't know if it was part of my healing or not, but I did it.
Right, right. Now, you have a master's degree in chemical engineering, which is interesting to me. Has this helped you in your health and vegan advocacy work?
You know, I think it has. To start with,
how?
Just so many different ways. But for one, the corporations today that control our food are chemical companies, DuPont and Monsanto. And they've realized that if they patent things, they can make money on things. So they're creating things, better living through chemistry. Chemical engineers out there are manipulating our food, and for the most part, I think, not for the better. And when studies come out that talk about nutrition or talk about new foods, or patents come out that talk about that's the government is looking at approving, I can read those and I can understand them. That helps in my choices, and what I communicate to other people about what's good for us or not. There's a lot of literature that's really overwhelming and hard to understand, especially for people that don't focus on it all the time. We hear sound bites in the media that scare us or warn us of certain things, and so many times they're out of context and they're not right. And understanding the science, understanding how studies are done, so many studies are not good. They're not done well. And I make my decision whether I think, oh, this is good or not, and I can trust the results or not. So I think it's really helped.
Uh-huh. Have you heard about the new level of GMOs that Monsanto is introducing? It's going to be like the Roundup Ready 2, I think it's called. And it's Dicamba.
I haven't.
Yeah, it's the new Roundup Ready 2 soybeans, and they're engineered to withstand sprayings of not just Roundup weed killer, but also Dicamba, which works by disrupting a plant's hormonal system and causes them to grow in abnormal ways, and usually ends, you know, causes them to die. But this new chemical was involved in Agent Orange. And it just sounds terrible.
You know what? It's sad and amusing at the same time, but most of these chemicals find used as pesticides and herbicides were originally for wartime and for killing humans and destroying things. And chemical companies wanted to find another use for their product.
Right.
So they want to put it on our food.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really scary. You know, they have to keep upping it, you know, because we have these super weeds now, you know, that have become resistant, which, of course, makes sense. Nature is amazing and will find ways to continue, you know, survival of the fittest. And they're going to, you know, it's going to mutate and develop to withstand the new challenges. And, you know, so they have to keep making the chemicals stronger and stronger. And so it's imperative that more and more of us, you know, get behind organic and sustainable agriculture and promote that wherever we can. And that's one of the things that we talked about earlier on Tuesday, celebrating Winota's Howder's new book, Foodopoly. And that was, you know, what we were talking about on Tuesday. And you had her as a guest on your show. I had her. I think she was on Leonard Lope on NPR as well. I mean, she's really out there promoting this book, and this book is great for anybody who has not heard about it yet. Foodopoly, it's the battle over the future of food and farming in America. And she's really, you know, addressing so many of these issues that you and I talk about all the time about our food system and what the changes are. I was wondering if you know, we're going to take a break in just a minute. But when we come back from our break, I wanted to really kind of talk about the Foodopoly issue and her book and where our food system has gone and what we need to do, all of us, to try to get it back. Because, it's, you know, as she described, it's more than just making those food choices. We really have to get a little bit more political about it.
Sounds great.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I've been talking with Karen Harklath. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Karen Harklath. She is the host of It's All About Food on the Progressive Radio Network, and her show's on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. And we've been talking about our mutual passion for food. And right now, I invited her on so we could also talk about the book. We both interviewed the author, Winota Howder, Foodopoly. And this book is about the battle over the future of our food and farming in America. Karen, are you back?
Yeah, I just wanted to say my show is on Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Tuesday at 4 p.m. And you also have another show, Ask a Vegan.
Yeah, I do that from my responsibleeatingandliving.com website every Sunday, and then archive those shows just like at PRN, where people can listen at any time.
Great. So you interviewed Winona also, and was there anything most striking that you learned from reading the Foodopoly book or talking with her?
Yeah, well, for a long time, I've been saying that the most important thing to do, and I still believe it, is to act with integrity in our own personal lives and support what we believe in with our dollars, buying the foods from sources that we respect and feel good about, that are sustainable, that aren't harming the earth, aren't harming animals, and creating food that won't harm ourselves. But I'm learning, and I learned this from her book, that that's not enough. And while I'm already feeling very tired and exhausted from all the work that I do, I feel like it's not enough. I have to do more.
Right.
And the piece that is missing is communicating with government, writing letters, contacting my representatives. From time to time, I'll make a phone call. But it's very rare that I'll write a letter. I'll sign petitions online. But I'm starting to think that writing our politicians is going to have the most power.
Right. You know, they can get an email, you know, that says they have this many signatures. But that doesn't have the same impact as receiving hundreds of thousands of envelopes into their mailbox.
Yeah, because they know, and it's true, that unless you're really moved by something, you're not going to take the time and write a letter. That's the power of the written word on paper, on something real. And it's kind of representative of our culture today here in the United States, especially. We don't make anything. We don't make anything tangible, really. And putting something on paper is powerful. It's tangible. It's real.
Right.
So I have to start writing, and hopefully the post office will still be in existence and can deliver it to the government.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, one of the things that the book really emphasized was how the deregulation and the conglomeration of corporate America has taken over our wonderful small little organic producers. So they're not small wonderful little organic producers anymore. They have a big agribusiness or a big corporation behind them, whether it's General Foods or Nestle or Kraft.
They want to water down the definition of what organic means.
Right, they do, and they have a lot of money to do that. And so many of these companies, the parent companies, put millions of dollars into defeating the Proposition 37, the labeling law for GMOs in California, and helped to defeat that. It was such a close call. I mean, last I heard, actually, they were recounting it because they actually don't even know if it really lost. But they spent millions and millions of dollars to defeat that law because it was going to cost them a lot of money.
Yeah, it was something like between $7 and $8 million for the people that wanted the proposition passed, to like over $45 million for the companies that didn't want it to pass.
Right.
And just, there are some occasions, we saw it with some people that ran for government this year that had gazillions of dollars put into their campaign and they lost. Money does not buy everything, but it does help.
Right. So this book is just like pushing us to think more deeply about both the politics and the economics that are dictating our diet, and then, our roles as shoppers and eaters is just becoming much, much more complicated. And so, like I mentioned, Muir Glen, which, makes products that I've been buying for years. Well, mm-hmm. I no longer can buy those products. I'm boycotting them. Honest Tea that came out, people are buying these, healthy drinks, Naked and all these different new drinks that are all over the place are owned by the big, Pepsi and Coke and Kraft. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Right.
And then grocery powerhouses like Walmart, so many people, even in our circles, are saying, oh, isn't it wonderful? Walmart's now buying organic.
Yeah, and I know. I remember kind of thinking that from one perspective, because it's good that people want to buy organic and it's good that they offer it, but
right, and I was thinking also, I agree with you. I was thinking, more people will get into organic seeing it at Walmart, and Walmart is, has so much power, let them promote organic. But behind the scenes, they're really, pushing for lower costs from the farmers, and they are pushing for, legislation that is really not positive for our food system.
One of the things, I didn't read this in Foodopoly, I read this in another article, but it was about genetically modified food, how the best argument against it, or the most provable argument, is not the health issue, because even though in my gut I don't think these foods are healthy, it's really hard to prove it because there have not been any long-term studies. There haven't been any good studies on the impact of genetically modified foods on our health and on the environment. We have some suspicions, but they're hard to prove. But what isn't hard to prove is how the corporations are gaining more control of our food supply with genetically modified foods, because you can't save seeds. You have to buy them every year from the company that has a patent on them. And this is the scary part, that these big corporations control our food supply from the seed.
Right, right. And also for the integrity of organic, you can't control the wind. You can't control the pollination with the bees. You can't control nature. And so, you know, we have organic honey, but who's to say where those bees are really flying? You know, are they getting into the, you know, the crops of the GMOs? And, you know, you have these small farmers that are being sued by Monsanto because they'll find some GMO product on their farms that they did not plant there, so they did not buy it from Monsanto. So Monsanto is, you know, suing them for growing their seed without permission.
Right, and without paying the fees, and that is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So heartbreaking, and it's so hard to believe that our justice system supports the devil.
Right. Well, what is what is so scary is as you study more and more about the connection between our food and food politics, and you see that the CEOs and the big shots of these big corporations are also working for our government. And so when we talk about conglomerations and the coming together, there's also the conglomeration between our government organizations that are supposed to protect us, like the, you know, Organic Standards Board and the Food and Drug Administration and the Department of Agriculture. I mean, Tom Vilsack, who heads up our Department of Agriculture, was voted the top governor when he was governor of Texas as the top governor from the biotech companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are so in
bed. They're all in bed
together.
The revolving door, and yes, they jump in and out of bed together.
And, you know, in all other areas of business, there used to be something called conflict of interest, right?
Right, and checks and balances, yeah.
Right. You know, I'm forgetting all the connections between some of our Supreme Court justices and these biotech companies, but they exist.
Of course.
So, I mean, it used to be illegal to patent life, but somehow Monsanto's gotten it through the Supreme Court to patent life.
Right.
You used to not be able to patent a seed. And so they have the patent on these GMOs, and they control it, like you said, and it is really scary.
The other thing is genetically modified foods. I want to stay away from the health impacts because, like I said before, it's so hard to prove. But another thing that isn't hard to prove is that genetically modified foods, cultivating them, supports all of our bad agricultural habits. It supports monocropping, growing the same kind of food for acres and acres and acres and acres and acres. And this encourages an imbalance in the soil. It encourages an imbalance in nature, so which invites viruses, which invites infestations of bugs that will eat the crops. And that in turn, it's a cycle that requires more herbicides, more pesticides, more toxic chemicals in the earth. Genetically modified foods encourage that. We want to get away from that. We want to get more diversified with our planting. And it's harder to do this. It's less efficient. It's harder for machines to harvest when you have smaller areas of different crops. But I think smaller is better. It will give more people jobs and give us healthier food.
Right. And you said it's hard to prove. The reason it's hard to prove is also because there's not the money for the research, because the companies that pay for most of the research that we have are the companies that are set to make profit from it. So, you know, where most research is happening at universities, these chemical companies... What's that?
You just took the words out of my mouth. Another thing in the book, in Foodopoly, was talking about the incestuous relationship between universities and corporations.
Yes.
Universities, which we want to think create pure objective science, forget about it.
Yeah, well, that's why there's all this push also from universities now, who they are all coming up with sustainable ag programs and sustainable business model programs, and, you know, sustainable is the lingo, and you know, they're using it in the front of the house. But in the back of the house, this is what Bill McKibben was talking about in his big push, you know, with 350.org to try to get universities to divest their money. I mean, they all have these huge, huge investments in companies that are promoting these things, as well as their research departments working with these chemical companies to support what they want. I mean, as a matter of fact, the scientists that come out speaking out against these chemical companies end up losing their jobs.
And there actually was research recently. The economy and the condition that it is today, this is what makes it especially challenging. For the individual, maybe they're out of work, maybe they're on a really tight budget. It's really hard to make choices to support what we believe in, because very often the foods or the products that are made by sustainable companies are more expensive.
Right. Right.
And when you're on a tight budget, it's hard to make those choices. And then for a researcher at a university or someone in the a professor or someone going for a grant, universities are strapped for cash, so they don't want to sever these relationships with the big bucks.
Right. Well, I know, you know, I was one of the organizers for the Small Farm Summit that we had on Long Island. And, you know, and I work with an organization called Sustainable Long Island. And there's a lot of, you know, companies and organizations trying to do good things out there, and yet it takes money to put together a big conference, you know, and if you're trying to hold up to your standards and trying to get financing, you don't want to, you almost don't want to take money from a company that you don't believe in, you know. I've affiliated myself with the 99%, you know, do I want banks backing the Small Farm Summit? You know, do I want Miracle-Gro donating money? And Miracle-Gro, you know, so they have a little section of organic. But basically, Miracle-Gro is a big chemical company, and yet they have a department that does a lot of philanthropic work, and they give a lot of money. And so they are willing to give money, but do we want to take money from them? And so it's really... You know,
it's hard.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So, you know, I think we're both saying these choices aren't easy, and that's why earlier in the show I mentioned the Environmental Working Group, which is just, you know, a great organization, kind of giving you choices, knowing that, you know, organic is more expensive. That's why I really promote that Dirty Dozen list, so that people can know which ones are really, really important to buy organic, which vegetables and which ones aren't. But, you know, this whole issue of the parent companies versus the smaller organic companies and buying organic, it's a real difficult choice.
Winona talked about in her book, Farmers Markets and Community Supported Agriculture, which are great things. And I think if you have access to either one of them, it's a terrific thing, a place to get your food, because it eliminates all the middlemen and you're just directly working and supporting the farmer and you're getting to know them. But she was saying that that's a drop in the bucket, that's not really having a big impact. I want to think that it's going to grow, especially if more people support it. I'd like to see more of our food coming directly from farmers without having to travel all around the world and be in storage places before we finally get it.
Right. Well, one thing people definitely can start doing is trying to eat a little more seasonably. You know, what is in season? I know that's harder for us in the Northeast, because we can't grow things year-round. But even, you know, like the stuffed peppers that I talked about, you know, that have, you know, some root vegetables in them and that are hearty, you know, just trying to, you know, eat more seasonably and use vegetables that are more friendly to the climate.
You know, I was listening to you describe that recipe, and I'm always thinking when I'm talking about food that I'm hoping one day technology comes up with a way to smell what you're talking about. When you're cooking something, smell is so important. It wouldn't be great if it could come out of our headsets.
It would be.
But the other thing I wanted to say is I agree. I like to use red and orange and yellow peppers because they're sweeter, but also they're ripe. Green peppers aren't ripe. If you let the green pepper hang on the vine, it'll turn red, yellow, or orange.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're less expensive, because they haven't been growing as long. And a lot of people have digestive problems with green peppers because they're just not ripe.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's fun when you grow peppers
sweeter.
And you don't know what color they are to see what color they
turn. Well, I
plant
peppers every year, and I'm always fascinated to see what I end up with, because I don't always know what they're going to be. They're not always, you know, what they say on the package, even though they should be. You know, and sometimes I just don't know the names of the peppers. So I'm still, you know, I'm still an infant in my farming experience, even though I've been doing it now for, you know, probably 8 years. I still feel like such a beginner because I'm, you know, doing it small time.
Everybody should grow food. And I live in an apartment in New York City. I have a terrace, so I don't have a lot of place to grow, but I grow whatever I can. Herbs, I grew peppers for a few years, tomatoes, a variety of things. And what I like to do is save seeds from my organic foods.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something... I think it's spiritual or something, knowing that I can eat something, save the seeds, treasure them, and then replant them. We've gotten so far away from that.
Right. Well, especially for fruits, it's easy to save the seeds. It's a little more challenging to let a green go to flower to get the seed. You know, it's takes a little bit more restraint to, like, know that you're not going to eat that plant. And you're going to, you know.
I saved a lot of kale seeds and watercress seeds, and I was going to plant them, and I didn't. So hopefully they'll be good for next time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of seeds that I've saved as well. And, you know, and they also say it gets hardier being growing in the same soil. It gets used to the soil that you have and to your climate and becomes more sturdy, just like I was talking about survival of the fittest before. You know, the seed over time really adapts to your specifics and becomes happier in its home is a good way of describing it, and I think that really happens.
To comment on the survival of the fittest, there's... When it comes to humans, they're talking more that maybe we have survived over a long period of time because of cooperation. And I like to apply that, too, to plants. Certainly, the hardier plants are going to survive. But also planting different foods together in cooperation. Some plants leave certain nutrients in the soil that other plants can use. And it's beautiful harmony and balance that we've gotten away from. Organic agriculture uses it to some extent. Biodynamic agriculture uses it. But nature's smart. Nature has all the answers for us.
Right. No, it's true. Combination, you know, companion planting is what they call it. You know, it's really, really wonderful because certain vegetables, you know, repel certain type of insects, and another one might attract it, and they balance each other off. So it's really amazing when you can use companion planting to your benefit. And also the rotation of crops. You know, I had...
Everybody needs a rest. Everybody.
Yeah.
And she, Winona talked about that in Foodopoly, too, about how farmers pushed to plant as much as they could when things started to be deregulated, and they didn't let their fields rest, which is so important to keep the soil rich and alive.
Right. And on that note, we need to rest because we are out of time. This hour goes so fast, I could keep going. But we are out of time, so I am going to thank you, Karen, for joining me today on the show. For people that want to listen, you can find, and If you've missed the show or any of the past shows, you can find us on the archives at prn.fm. And you can also rate the shows on iTunes. I want to thank you all for joining us. Karen, thank you for joining us. Have a great rest of the week. And I will be with you all again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Have a great one.